The views expressed on Inside Scoop do not necessarily reflect those of the station owner, management, or staff of WAGE.
Good evening, America, and welcome to the Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government and some of its lapdog supporters in the media don't want you to know about. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and welcome back to my second show. We're trying here at the Inside Scoop to be something different from what you get on most talk radio, something different from Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Gordon Liddy and all the rest of them. We're going to talk about real policy, real things that matter in Congress, and we want to hear from you. Today, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to finish up what we talked about last week on intelligence information and homeland security. We're going to talk about the Bush tax cuts, and specifically about the Republican plan, just passed the House of Representatives last week, to repeal the estate tax. And we're going to conclude with my comments on some very important Supreme Court decisions that just came out last week, one on affirmative action and one on sodomy laws. So if you have a comment or a question on any of these things, please give us a call. The local number here is 703-777-1200. You can call that from anywhere. If you're outside Northern Virginia and Metro Washington, D.C., maybe you're listening on the web on the IBN network, you can call in 1-877-57-SCOOP. Again, in the local area, it's 703-777-1200. Now, one of the ways you can reach us here at the Inside Scoop is by email, and I very much welcome those that respond by email, and that is by going to www.wage.com or to my own website, www.radioinsidescoop.com. So we very much welcome your comments there. And as I've said before, I welcome those who disagree with me. I think that we need to get some intelligent conversation on the air, so if you disagree with me, go ahead, give me a call. I want to start with an email that I got from Frank from Arlington. And Frank writes, "Mark, thanks for your interesting new show. You told me to write if I disagree, though, and I do." Frank says, "Mark, you said on your show that the president may be making up intelligence information to justify the war in Iraq, which I supported, by the way. And I want to know if you really believe there is a vast right-wing conspiracy by the president to manipulate public opinion to support a war in Iraq." Thank you for your email, Frank. Well, I didn't say there was a vast right-wing conspiracy. What I said was we need an investigation. We need to find out what the president knew and when he knew it. And there may be. I mean, those words you use, vast right-wing conspiracy, I know where they come from. Obviously, they come from Hillary Clinton talking about people out to get out to get Bill Clinton in the Lewinsky affair. And we do know now that there was a pretty vast right-wing conspiracy. There were a number of people paying millions of dollars to people to try to get dirt on Bill Clinton. As far as this, I think we need an investigation. And whether or not the president knew about it, that's what we need to know. Here's my view. If there's nothing to hide, then the president shouldn't mind an investigation. If there's nothing to hide, the president should want to know exactly what went wrong with our intelligence. Why is it that we didn't know about September 11th until it was too late? And even after September 11th, why is it that we apparently were wrong about these weapons of mass destruction? And in support of this, interestingly enough, Frank, there's an article in New York Times just last Wednesday, June 25th, where the headline is, "Experts said to tell legislatures he was pressed to distort some evidence." I want to read you a little bit from that article. It says, "A top State Department expert on chemical and biological weapons told congressional committees in closed-door hearings last week that he had been pressed to tailor his analysis on Iraq and other matters to conform with the Bush administration's views." Now, I would think that would concern you. Furthermore, and this may be even more important, at that hearing, when Representative Silveo Reyes, a Texas Democrat, asked a number of the intelligence officials whether any of them had felt political pressure in the development of their intelligence reports, all of them, except for that one official, Mr. Westerman, remained silent. Now, they didn't say no, they felt no pressure. They didn't say yes, they felt pressure. They remained silent. Why are they silent? If they didn't feel pressure, they should say so. If they did, I would hope they would say so. And I would hope the president would get out on front of this and say, look, we have nothing to hide. Investigate as you will. I'm afraid that there may be a reason why he's not doing it. So I don't know whether there's a vast right-wing conspiracy, but I'll tell you this, Frank. History tells us to be careful. I don't know whether you've studied this in American history, but going way back to the Spanish-American War in 1898, there was a ship that the president said, McKinley at the time, was blown up, and it was the Maine. Turns out it was a boiler accident. But the rallying cry, remember the Maine, led us into a war with Spain that led us to conquer the Philippines and Cuba and Puerto Rico and some other places. Now, it may well be that it was a good thing to conquer those territories. But I would hope you agree with me, Frank, that it wasn't a good thing for the president to lie in order to get us into war. Bringing us into the present day, of course, in the Vietnam War, we have the Gulf of Tonkin incident, where a Democratic president seems to have lied to Congress and the American people in claiming there was an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin that later seems to have been manufactured. So we have a long history in American history of presidents lying to get us into war. And again, even if you supported the war in Iraq, and I, for one, clearly agree that Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, and, you know, I'm certainly not sorry that he's gone, I think you'd have to agree with me that it's not good for the president to lie to get us into war. For one thing, the rest of the world knows we're lying. We brought forged documents to the United Nations, forged documents dealing with an aluminum tube in Nigeria that it was claimed Iraq tried to purchase, and we now know those documents were completely forged. Well, the rest of the world knows the truth here, and in fact, their press isn't quite as, I guess, lapdog support of the president as ours. And so when we have a real crisis, and you got to remember, North Korea got nuclear weapons at the same time we were worried about Iraq. And whether it's North Korea or Iran or Saudi Arabia or Syria, these countries, I think, pose a greater danger, a greater threat to the United States than Iraq ever did. And so when the rest of the world knows that we're lying, it doesn't help if we have to confront a crisis for the future. So that's my view, and I thank you for your email. We also talked last week about Homeland Security, and I got to say I'm glad to see that a lot of the press is finally writing about this things that I've talked about. One of the things we talked about was the failure to protect nuclear sites. And, interestingly enough, Wednesday, after my show, Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham has ordered a broad overhaul of security at the nation's nuclear weapons laboratories. Congress, this is actually Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, said at a hearing that there were security problems, serious security problems, at the weapons laboratories, including lost keys to secure areas, guards found sleeping, stolen laptop computers, and a case where two vials of plutonium oxide were missing for 2 years without being reported. Now, as I talked about last week, Secretary Abraham originally wanted $379 million to protect our nuclear plants, but President Bush said no and gave him about 7% of what he sought. And now we're learning from press reports that our national security is dangerously lax. And my question for you folks, and again, the numbers here are 703-777-1200, or if you're outside of Northern Virginia and Metro D.C., you can call 1-877-57-SCOOP. My question here is, do you think that we are spending too much on Homeland Security, as the president apparently thinks, because he doesn't want to spend any more? Or do you think we're spending too little? And would you give up about one-tenth of your latest tax cut in order to fund Homeland Security? Again, they're writing in the press that we are in trouble. There's another article that mentions the Council on Foreign Relations. And this is a panel of experts led by a Republican, Senator Rudman. And they write that at this level of spending, at the current level of spending on Homeland Security, quote, the United States remains dangerously ill-prepared, unquote. They cite that fire departments had breathing equipment for only about a third of their firefighters, and that we just don't have enough protection for chemical and nuclear plants. So the question is, what do you think? We're going to move into the tax cut as we go on the next part of this program, But I want you to think as we discuss the tax cut, which you think is more important, a tax cut that mainly benefits those who don't earn any income, or do you think we should spend the money to protect our national security? Republicans have traditionally been the ones that people have thought would protect national security. But now they're not, and the press really isn't reporting it very much. And that's why we bring it to you here on the Inside Scoop. So, again, the numbers are 703-777-1200, 877-57-SCOOP, S-C-O-O-P. And we'll be back with the tax cuts right after this.
A message about Anderson Windows and Patio Doors from J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. If you suffered through the last few months with leaky, drafty windows or patio doors, now is the time to replace them. And Anderson is the brand to choose. Anderson Windows and Patio Doors give you beautiful, natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. It's no wonder professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson more than any other brand. Plus, the staff at J.T. Hurst can give you some great tips on installation should you decide to do it yourself. Or they can recommend a professional contractor to do the job for you. See the full line of Anderson products at J.T. Hurst & Company on Catoctin Circle in Leesburg. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. Anderson Windows, long live the home.
How many different organizations list you as a member? You might be a member of a sports team, a book club, travel or CD club. But what does that membership really mean? Does membership in a book club allow you to vote on who runs the organization? Can you help shape the long-term future of your CD club? I don't think so. You can, however, shape the future of your electric company. That is, if you're a NOVEC customer. NOVEC, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, is owned by the consumers we serve and governed by a board of directors elected from the membership. Pretty cool, huh? But wait, there's more. NOVEC's customers share in the company's profits. Last year, we distributed more than $9.1 million in capital credits to our membership. The power to vote and a share of the profits. Membership doesn't get much better than this. NOVEC, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. NOVEC. I got the power to move ya.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're taking your calls. We've been talking about Homeland Security, and we're going to move on and talk about the Bush tax cut. The numbers here are 703-777-1200, if you're listening locally on Wage Radio. If you're listening on the web at www.radioinsidescoop.com on the IBN network, you can call 1-877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Again, if you're local, you should call 703-777-1200. One of the emails I got was from someone who agreed. We don't just get email from those who disagree. And this is from Joseph in Alexandria. He sends me just an interesting quote. I don't know whether it's true. I didn't get a chance to check it out. But he says it's from Colonel Oliver North from his Iran-Contra testimony. And Ollie North is supposed to have said, quote, "I was provided with additional input that was radically different from the truth. I assisted in furthering that version," unquote. And, of course, that's our question here. Is our president assisting a version that is radically different from the truth? One more article before I move on to the tax cuts, and that is from last week's Washington Post. It says, "Airport security remains porous. Screeners depart, officials alarmed." Again, we just set up this wonderful Transportation Security Administration, just set up all these airport screeners, and now we're firing them. We're letting them go. Is it because they're bad, because they have criminal records? No. No. The reason is because we've got to fund George Bush's tax cuts. And so that's why I wanted to take the time to discuss the tax cuts. I want to know whether you think that it's worthwhile to take this money away from our police and our firefighters and our Homeland Security in order to give certain people a tax cut. And one of the things that I really want to talk about is the estate tax, because this is the not just because it happened last week, by the way. The House of Representatives, controlled by the Republicans, did repeal the estate tax once and for all, but also because it's important to recognize that when people talk about the Bush tax cuts, they're not talking about all taxes cut across the board. All of us pay sales tax. We pay, that comes, of course, from local and state governments. And George Bush is starving local and state governments. They have to increase the sales tax. That's not going down. All of us who work for a living pay Social Security tax and FICA. You know, when you get your first summer job, a lot of kids find that they're surprised that so much goes to Social Security and FICA. And that, of course, would be worthwhile if the money was going to come back to us when we retire. But what we know is that George Bush is spending the Social Security tax cut. He's using that very money that poor and middle-class people are putting into Social Security, and he's using it to fund his tax cuts, mostly for the wealthy. The main taxes, though, that George Bush seems to be cutting, and the ones that the House Republicans focused on last week, that's the estate tax. And the estate tax means that when someone dies and you inherit a lot of money, then the question is, should you pay tax on that amount? And so the House Republicans, they think that, you shouldn't pay tax on that. Well, I got a call from Howard in Herndon. Howard, you want to comment on the tax cuts? I'm sorry, Howard, I'm having trouble hearing you. Are you on a cell phone?
Is really not very progressive, and I'm worried that the Bush tax cut is probably going to change things around and make it worse for local governments. Is that what you feel also?
I do. You're fitting a little bit in and out. It's on a cell phone. But the question, as I understand it, is whether the Bush tax cuts are regressive. In other words, they're basically taking money from the poor and giving them to the rich, and whether that sort of starves local governments. Is that your question?
Yeah, in effect, yes.
Okay. Well, I think that's the case. And there's really two elements to it. Let me start with the local governments, because that's actually the simpler question. Local and state governments traditionally get a certain amount of funds from the government, and it helps them with everything from, you know, Homeland Security to funding police departments like the COPS program that came from Clinton. And we find that George Bush has done more to starve local and state governments than practically any president in recent times. And this is clearly a policy decision, because we just can't finance these tax cuts unless we take the money from somewhere. And so he's starving the state and local governments. Now, the point about regressive taxation, that's one that I particularly am concerned about. And I'm concerned not just for equality reasons, the question of whether, you know, poor people should pay taxes or rich people should pay taxes. I think you'd find, and I think most economists would agree with me, and I have a degree in economics, that any economist will tell you, if you give a certain amount of money to poor people, they're simply more likely to spend it than the same amount of money going to rich people. And I'll give you an example. You give a poor person $1,000, and they're trying to make their rent, and they're trying to go to the grocery and pay for the food, and just trying to live day to day, they're going to spend that money. If you give it to someone who's making $1 million a year, he probably won't even notice that $1,000, or maybe even $5,000. He's already buying what he needs to buy, and so he probably won't spend that money. So that it's not just a question of equality and fairness, it's also a question of what will promote the economy, what will cause this economy to get moving. So, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I wish more people were talking about that.
Well, thank you for calling, Howard. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
One of the things in talking about the estate tax that we have to keep in mind is that no one earns an estate tax. How do you get money from an estate tax? Well, if you are lucky enough to have a very rich person die and will you the money, that's how you get money for the estate tax. One of the best people who's of course gotten money from inheritance, one of the ones that's most well known, is Anna Nicole Smith, right? She married an elderly man, and when he died, she got money from him. Now, my question for you listeners is this. Do you believe, as the Republicans believe, that Anna Nicole Smith should pay no taxes on that money, and that a secretary trying to work three jobs, maybe, or working hard at minimum wage, a factory worker, that they should pay money on their income? Republicans believe that earned income, what you actually work to make a living, that should be taxed. But unearned income, things you just die and get an inheritance, or if it's dividends that you're getting from a corporation, again, money that you didn't earn, that you should just get the money and it should be tax-free, or at least a much lesser tax. What do you think? Which should be taxed more, earned income or unearned income? And now we have a call from Larry in Leesburg on the estate tax. Yes, Larry.
I think I should be able to inherit my father's house. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the Republicans saying that I should be able. My parents worked hard for their house, and I think I should be able to inherit it.
Well, okay, Larry, you make a good point. And one of the things that the Democrats proposed at the same time that the House Republicans passed the estate tax was to give a certain amount of money, $3 million per person, a total of $6 million per couple, so that, you know, basic inheritance could be passed on without tax. Now, I don't know whether that house is worth more than $6 million. If so, it's quite a mansion.
It's not.
Okay. Well, basically, you know, $3 million per person, $6 million per couple, that's what the Democrats wanted to do. I mean, after all, we do think that most families should be able to pass on money tax-free. But the state tax affects less than half of 1%. In fact, the latest statistics that I've seen, it's 0.35%. One-third of 1%.
You mean to say if my parents had $5 million, I could inherit that tax-free?
You could under the Democrats' plan. What you would do is you'd get $3 million from one and $2 million from the other, and you'd still actually have $1 million to spare. And that was the Democrats' proposal. But the Republicans voted it down. They want to stop the estate tax entirely. And what that would do is protect people like Anna Nicole Smith or Bill Gates' children, who would still get $6 million tax-free under the Democratic plan, but now they can get hundreds of millions of dollars tax-free.
And is Bill Gates wanting this tax cut?
Actually, I'm not sure. That's a good question. My understanding is that he's against it. My understanding is that Bill Gates actually opposes this because he thinks that poor people, frankly, have to struggle to make a living more than rich people do, and that they frankly, need the money more. But I thank you for your call, Larry. One of the things, again, on this tax, the estate tax, that we have to keep in mind is that when someone dies, they're no longer, they get to control their where the money goes through a will, but they're no longer around. And I think sometimes you have to, you know, the Republicans call this a death tax, and they do that to say, well, you shouldn't tax someone for dying. But when you're dead, frankly, maybe that's the person that we really don't have to worry about hurting. I mean, after all, again, you got some poor person working to take two, three jobs together, compared to some heir, trust fund baby, that gets millions of dollars. And again, my question is for you, Americans. If you support the tax cut, where do you think the money should come from? Should it come from poor working people? Should it come from rich heirs? Should it come from Homeland Security? Or maybe you just believe in borrowing the money so that your children have to pay it back. You know, one of the things that George Bush has done is run the biggest deficits in American history, and that means that foreign powers like China and Japan and Europe, these people have to buy our bonds. Well, we have to pay them back because that's good U.S. credit. So my challenge for anyone who supports the Bush tax cuts is, where do you think the money should come from? So I'd like someone to answer that challenge. The phone number here is 703-777-1200. Or if you're listening on IBM, on www.radioinsidescoop.com, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. The lines are open. We look forward to your calls. Back after this.
Discriminating shoppers throughout the greater Washington, Baltimore area are discovering a new concept in furniture and accessories for the home. Brunelli Home Accents in the Leesburg Corner Premium Outlet Mall. At Brunelli Home Accents, you can browse through a remarkable selection of unique designs, domestic and international, contemporary and traditional. Select a new dining room table by Masterworks, artwork from Artisan House, occasional and dining room tables by Butler Furniture, Italian sofas by FCM Divani, light fixtures, mirrors, and imported vases by Josefina, and of course settings for your table by Brunelli. Located at the Premium Corner Outlet Mall on Fort Evans Road, just off the bypass, Brunelli Home Accents has the designs to satisfy the most discriminating tastes. Stop by soon. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 till 9, Sundays 11 till 6. Phone 703-771-6900. Brunelli Home Accents.
Ah, there's nothing like home improvement projects.
Oh, yeah? What are you planning?
Something to make our skin softer, cleaning easier, laundry softer and brighter.
Uh-huh.
Something that can even lower our utility bills and keep our pipes from clogging.
Oh, really?
And something that'll make our drinking water taste better than ever.
You can do all that in one weekend?
I can do all that in one phone call. Hey, Culligan Man.
For over 65 years, families have been saying, "Hey, Culligan Man," when they need a trusted water expert. Your local Culligan Man can help you choose the system that's just right for your home, and he backs it with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Right now, get both the Culligan water softener and drinking water for one low price, only $9.95 a month for the first 3 months. Enjoy Culligan water for your entire home and our best offer ever. So trust the water experts. Just call today and say,
"Hey, Culligan Man."
Improving your water is easy. Call your local Culligan dealer in Dulles today. You can trust the water experts.
Dealer participation may vary. Visit Culligan.com for details. Expires August 31st.
We're back on the air, 1200 AM, talking on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Phone lines are 703-777-1200. If you're outside the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C., metropolitan area, and listening on the web, you can call in at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And we got a call here from Caroline in Fairfax, and she's calling about the tax cut. Yes, Caroline, you're on the air.
Caroline?
Hello? Oh, I'm afraid we lost Caroline. Okay, I hope she calls back. One of the things that I wanted to focus on the tax cut is, again, there's two elements of reasons why most of the Democrats oppose the tax cut. One is the basic philosophy. There's no question about it. Democrats believe that everyone should pull their weight, rich as well as poor. But there's also the question of, you know, what income should best be taxed. Now, the Republicans believe, and I think it's kind of hard to defend, and I'd like to hear some of you conservatives defend it, they think that if you don't earn income, that you shouldn't pay tax on it. Now, let me make clear. If you don't earn anything, you just get lucky, you got a rich uncle who dies, or maybe you're Anna Coleman Smith, and you know, you get to know an elderly rich man very well, you should just get the money tax-free, while if you're poor working stiff, you should pay your Social Security money, and then George Bush will use that Social Security money and use it as part of the, you know, his tax cut. So, Caroline, looks like you're back on the air. Do we have Caroline here from Fairfax?
Yes, I'd like to ask a question.
Yes.
I want to know, why don't we cut down on all the government bureaucracy, and then we can have a tax cut, too?
Well, that's a good question, and a lot of people say that we should cut down the government bureaucracy, but do you have any particular bureaucracy in mind?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of waste in the government spending that we could decrease.
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem, is that we have people that, you know, like yourself, that talk about waste, but they never seem to specify what waste it is. Under Bill Clinton, actually Vice President Gore did set up a commission to study government waste and looked into cutting everything he could, and he did cut some hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's hard to know exactly where the waste is unless you know you talk about something specific. I mean, the era of $100 toilet seats and so forth may be over. Sure, we should definitely look into cutting government waste. That should be the first thing we cut, but I think we have to look, and people have to be specific, because one person's waste is one person's government program.
I'll give you a specific example. In the Clinton era, and I remember this well, in 1994, there was a program that the Republicans considered to be waste. It was Clinton's midnight basketball program. And the Republicans said, I can't think of any more wasteful program than to fund money for basketball at midnight for inner city youth. What a ridiculous program. Now, the program happened to be a fairly small one. It was in the tens of millions of dollars, which is about a 10,000th or a 100th of 1% of George Bush's latest tax cut. So it was a very, very small program. But Republicans said that's waste and we need to cut it. But if you think carefully about that particular program, you can see why, in addition to doing some good for inner city youth, it actually saves money. And let me tell you why. When you think about inner city youth and what they're doing at midnight, well, you know, hopefully people are sleeping. But if they're not sleeping, where is it better for them to be? Out on the streets, in gangs, maybe selling drugs, or taking out their competition and doing it at a midnight basketball game. At a midnight basketball game, they can get out all their aggressions and actually do it in a community forum and not get in run-ins with gangs and the police. Because if you look at it purely on a monetary basis, it costs about $50,000 a year to incarcerate someone. That's a lot of money. That's a lot less than it costs to fund a basketball game for somebody. So even if you're looking at it solely in terms of what is the best benefit, you can see that it's actually better to have the midnight basketball game than it is to fund someone in prison.
What about all this foreign aid that we give to foreign countries?
Well, I think that's...
We need it here at home.
Well, that's a good question, too. And is there any specific foreign aid you have in mind?
Well, I know there are a lot of countries like Egypt and some of the Middle East countries we give foreign aid to.
Well, you know what? I agree with you on Egypt. We actually give a lot of aid to Israel and to Egypt. I support our aid to Israel. I think Israel is an embattled democracy that needs the aid. But Egypt, I'm not so sure. Egypt signed a peace treaty with Israel, but it hasn't been that peaceful. And some of the stuff that Egypt has been doing lately, particularly in their press, if you listen to their press, they've been saying a number of anti-American things. And, of course, four of the 19 hijackers came from Egypt. I think we maybe should reconsider our aid to Egypt, and on that I agree with you. But, you know, one of our biggest, and you can call it foreign aid, expenses is the war with Iraq. I mean, that cost upwards of $75 billion, maybe even more. And I think it's yet to be seen whether that provides us with greater security. But there's no question. We have to look at each and every program. We have to see where we can cut. But in the Clinton years, we actually were running a surplus. We were running the greatest surplus in American history. And we should always look at waste. But sometimes I think that, you just don't have the money when you're giving all the money back to rich people on tax cuts. And I think the estate tax particularly is a good one to cut the slack. So I thank you, Caroline, for your call.
Thank you.
All right. We're coming up on 39 after the hour. The phone lines are open. It's 703-777-1200, and we'll have more after this.
Jenkins Nissan, you're gonna love our style.
At Jenkins Nissan of Frederick, they speak the universal language of savings, and they've got a great deal for you no matter what language you speak or what you're looking for. Right now, Jenkins is offering $1,500 cash back plus 1.9% financing on Xterras, plus huge savings on 2003 Sentras. Get $1,500 cash back or 0.9% financing, and for a limited time only, choose from $3,000 cash back or $1,500 plus 0.9% financing on Sentra GXEs.
Hi, I'm Steve Latour, sales associate at Jenkins Nissan of Frederick. Stop in and see me today and test drive your new Nissan. At Jenkins Nissan, no matter what language you speak, we speak your language.
Hi, I'm Priscilla, sales associate at Jenkins. Hola, soy Priscilla, asistente de ventas en Jenkins Nissan de Frederick. Están bienvenidos a que maneje y pruebe tu nuevo Nissan. En Jenkins, no importa qué idioma hablas, nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
Jenkins Nissan of Frederick, at the corner of East and 9th Streets. Visit them online at frederick.com or jenkinsmotors.com. Subject to credit approval through NMAC.
Time. There never seems to be enough of it, and you spend so much time in your car, waiting at traffic lights, trapped in gridlock. time wasted. Until now. The AdOrganizer 9000 makes your traffic time productive time. Attaching securely to your dashboard, the AdOrganizer 9000 gives you space for your laptop, PDA, cell phone, headphone, and MP3 player with built-in...
Hold on there, boss. There are a lot of ways to steal some productive time back from Loudoun County traffic. But the smartest way is to avoid the heaviest traffic altogether, on the Dulles Greenway. You can drive from Leesburg to Dulles in about 15 minutes, 65 miles an hour the whole way. No traffic lights, no traffic hassles. And for less than your monthly cell phone bill, the Greenway may be the best investment you make every day. Oh yeah, and you can probably hit the snooze button and still get into the office early. The Dulles Greenway. Don't stress, just drive.
Back on the Inside Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine. You can call in and talk with us at 703-777-1200 if you're listening locally on Wage Radio. If you're listening on the web at www.wage.com or via IBN on www.radioinsidescoop.com and you're outside the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, dial 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking about the tax cuts, and we're talking about the philosophy, really, of tax cuts. Specifically, we're talking about the philosophy behind the estate tax. The Republicans want to repeal it. The Democrats say that after you pass down $3 million a person, that you should be taxed on that money, and that, of course, saves us from taxing working people. And I think when you look at this philosophy, it comes down to basically how you feel people should be rewarded in America or anywhere else for that matter. There are some that believe in a meritocracy, that people should be rewarded based on hard work, based on how well they do, and not based on who their parents are. There are others that believe just the opposite. They believe that people should be rewarded based on really a caste system. If their parents are rich, they should be rich. And we have to look at America, I think, at how some people achieve. There are those, like Bill Gates, for that matter, and I did look it up, and he does oppose the estate tax, who worked hard, developed a product, and are rewarded substantially for his hard work. There are others like our president, George W. Bush, and maybe I should call him Prince George. Prince George got there because his father, the king, decided that he should be president. We have a guy who failed in his very first business, in the oil business, a guy who got in fights with at a football game, got arrested for that, stole a wreath, drunk driving, really a guy that probably would not have achieved much if it hadn't been for his father. And we're going to talk a little bit about affirmative action at the bottom of the hour. But again, we have to ask, how did George W. Bush get into Yale? I don't think it was based on his intelligence. So that's a basic question for us. Should there be taxes that go to those who didn't earn the money, should they be taxed? Or should people who earn money, who work hard for a living, be taxed? And I'd really like to hear from you. We've got, I believe we have someone from New Bedford. Oh, just lost them. That's too bad. Lost someone from New Bedford, Massachusetts. Oh, no, we still got him. John. John from Massachusetts. Yes, you're on the air. John from New Bedford.
Yes,
there you are. Hi, John.
Yes,
how are you?
Very good, thank you. You know, I was commenting on the Homeland Security and the funds going towards there, and I was just thinking, I had read in the New York Times about New York City was promised quite a lot of money for their Homeland Security.
That's correct.
And were given a fraction of it, and when they requested it from the federal government or the Bush administration, they were called money grubbers.
That's correct.
And also, I know recently when I read something how it was distributed nationally, that I believe, if I remember correctly, Boston was almost given nothing, and a number of cities that, let's just say, might not be targets, but might have more partisan ties with the administration, were given quite a lot of money.
Yes, actually, Boston was originally given nothing, and the 10 congressmen from Massachusetts complained, and Boston they changed their mind and did give Boston money. And you're absolutely right about New York City. They were called money grubbers. And the interesting thing about New York City, in addition, as you point out, to it being a place where Bush has less support than elsewhere, is that there are chemical plants, and I wasn't going to say this last week, but it's now I saw it on CNN, so I think enough people know. The Indian River nuclear plant is very close to New York City. If a terrorist were to find a way to attack that plant, it could affect tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. And one of the things that New York City wants money for is to protect the Indian River nuclear plant. Excuse me, maybe New York State. But that money isn't going because the Bush administration is focusing on these tax cuts. And they have to come from somewhere. And the other point you bring is absolutely right. We have states like Wyoming, Dick Cheney's home state, which, and I got no disrespect for Wyoming. It's a beautiful country. But I don't see it as a place that's first on any terrorist list. And they are getting a substantial amount of money. And, I wish them well at Yellowstone, but clearly we have places that need the money more. So,
I understand it completely. I mean, I live near New Bedford, as I said, and I would not expect New Bedford to get more than Boston or New York, and it would just be common sense. And one, I'll let you go, but one other thing in reference to the tax cut, I mean, what about programs like No Child Left Behind? President Bush just, you know, took so much credit for it, and now the funding for that has been cut substantially, as well as AmeriCorps.
That's a very good point. In fact, George Bush has run, like his father, I don't know, a lot of people don't remember, but you may, the first George Bush claimed to be the education president, and we didn't see much during his time. And George W. Bush has also claimed that he's the one who really cares about education, and he has this No Child Left Behind Act, which we can talk about the tests at some point, but does at least provide an authorization for a lot more money for our schools, and that's why Ted Kennedy supported it. The problem is, and this is something that those of us who've worked in Congress, and I was a lawyer in Congress for a number of years, know that really the outside world, I think, doesn't know, is that to get money through Congress, it actually requires two bills. That's just the way it is. There has to be an authorization bill and an appropriations bill. And so you have to actually pass the law twice. And what Ted Kennedy supported with George Bush was an authorization bill. And the deal was that Bush would get the tests that he wanted to test teachers, the national tests, and in return, Kennedy would get authorized a lot of money for our schools. But what happened? Kennedy gave his part of the bargain, but when the appropriations bill came around, when it came time to actually fund these schools, Bush said no. He had his tax cuts in mind, and those came in front. So he kind of, I don't know, you know, he kind of used Ted Kennedy. I don't know if Kennedy will trust Bush again. But, you know, he didn't come through on his No Child Left Behind Act. And one last thing about New Bedford, Massachusetts. I know that it's a very important port. It's a port city. And one of the things that we need to protect in Homeland Security is our ports. We've got cargo going in and out, and we really have very little to check them. So one of the things that I would hope that we would focus on in our Homeland Security is protecting our ports. I thank you, John, for your call.
Thank you, Mark.
We're going to come back and talk about the Supreme Court decisions on affirmative action on the sodomy laws and take a few more of your calls at 703-777-1200 or outside the listening area, 877-57-SCOOP. Back right after this.
My name's Jamal, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by a guy named Rick, who took a class with the American Red Cross after I received blood, which was given at a blood drive by Maria.
Who gave blood after being encouraged by my husband, David. Who
learned how to make a family disaster plan and build a disaster supplies kit from Eddie, who volunteered to answer phones last spring. But it all started out with Angela, who helped
Eddie's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. There are simple things you can do through your local Red Cross to help prepare yourself, your family, and your community for the unexpected. Whether you decide to volunteer to help out those in need, give blood, or make a disaster supplies kit for your family, your actions can change lives.
Brought to you by the American Red Cross Loudoun County Chapter and WAGE.
I'm Bettina Gregory asking you to help solve a big problem in Loudoun County. Children are waiting.
650 of them, in fact, are waiting to get daycare. They come from working families. Their parents have gone from welfare to work, trying to make it without public money. But the cupboard is bare. Budget cuts mean there are no federal, state, or local funds to pay for daycare or summer camp, even though these low-income families qualify for assistance. Most of them are still below the poverty level. Loudoun leads all Virginia counties in moving people from welfare to work, 70%. That's great. But if these moms and dads can't get help caring for their children, they'll have to go back on welfare. That's why I'm asking you to contribute to the Fresh Air Full Care campaign. Call 703-478-1943. Together, we can make Loudoun work. That's 703-478-1943. Fresh Air Full Care for all of Loudoun's children.
We're back on the air with the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. You can reach us here at 703-777-1200. Or if you're outside the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, you can dial toll-free 877-557-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I did want to comment on the Supreme Court decisions last week on affirmative action and on sodomy laws. And by the way, if you want to respond to a point I make and you just don't have time to call in, or maybe you're listening to one of the archive shows, you can also email me by going to www.radioinsidescoop.com or send an email to mark@radioinsidescoop.com. The Supreme Court issued two very important opinions in the last week, one on affirmative action, one on sodomy laws. Now, anyone that has listened to me before or has read some of my works knows that I'm not one to praise the Supreme Court very often, particularly this one. In a 5-4 decision against really all manner of logic and law, this Supreme Court installed George Bush as president over the person that Americans elected, Al Gore, and decided not to count the votes. And I've never quite forgiven the Supreme Court for that. But this week, I do have to praise the Supreme Court. I think the affirmative action decision, a split decision, that said that you can allow diversity in college admissions, that is an important quality, but that you shouldn't have numerical quotas or a numerical point system, I think that comes right down on the mark, and I just want to say I support that. I think they came down right in the middle of that decision. That was largely Justice O'Connor's opinion, and I think it was a good one. And if you want to comment on that, feel free to give me an email and let me know what you think. The other major opinion that came down just a few days ago, of course, was the opinion in Lawrence v. Texas that said that the state cannot criminalize private consensual acts between two adults. Now, those of us in Virginia here know, or maybe don't know, maybe you might be surprised to learn, that in Virginia, prior to just a few days ago, it was illegal for a man and wife to have oral sex. It was illegal in Virginia, and they could be penalized. That was a misdemeanor under Virginia law. That's now gone by the wayside, and I think the Supreme Court was absolutely right. Penalizing consensual sexual behavior between two adults just doesn't make sense today, and it's against our freedom. It's against our liberties. Now, there are those that argue that, well, these laws were not enforced very often, and they really weren't that big a deal, and the Supreme Court should have just let the people decide. And one of the things that I'd like to focus on in my commentary on the sodomy decision is, what do we do with laws that are rarely enforced? When you look at laws like the Virginia statute that are so rarely enforced, they turn out, unfortunately, to be selectively enforced, and to be selectively enforced against certain people. And I think anytime we have a law that is selectively enforced, we really have to be careful. If you had a law, for example, that said if you're speeding on the highway, only blacks could be stopped, then there might not get enough people to complain. Or if you had something that really wasn't a big deal, let's talk about loitering. I just passed on my way to Wage to Studios here in Loudoun County. There was a sign pretty much near where I live that says no loitering. Well, if every single person who was hanging out on a street corner were immediately arrested and sent to jail, I don't think we'd have loitering statutes. I think that if every single person who had oral sex with their spouse was arrested and sent to jail, I don't think we'd have these laws. I think that the time the Supreme Court most has to step in is when we have the kind of laws for general application that are selectively enforced. In other words, if we have a sodomy law and it's only enforced against gay people, that's unfair. If we have a loitering law and it's only enforced against black people, that's unfair. And if we have these laws and they're enforced against everyone, I think we would see that people would vote against these laws. One of the best examples of this that I can think of in current modern America is our nation's drug laws. We find that if you use crack and you're a poor kid in the ghetto, often black, you're quite likely to be arrested and to go to jail for mere possession. But if you use cocaine and you're a white kid in the suburbs or even a white adult, you're much less likely to be tried and convicted. Now, if the government pursued rich people using cocaine with the same force that it pursued poor people using crack, do you think we would still have these draconian drug laws? We have a president of the United States, George W. Bush, who will not say whether or not he has done cocaine. He will say he hasn't done it recently. But when asked whether he's done it at all, he won't say. Now, I am the first to say that someone's past should be forgiven. I am also the first to say that our drug laws are too draconian. But when you have a president of the United States who won't say whether he himself has done this drug, still wanting to punish mostly poor people, mostly black people, for using a very similar kind of drug, then I think we have a problem here. To me, what the sodomy decision by the Supreme Court shows is that when you have a law that can affect millions of people, that we have to be more careful about selective enforcement than about the law itself. Because if everyone were punished under this law, then probably democratic forces would wipe the law away. So when Scalia says, hey, we should have left this up to democracy, the exact problems with these kinds of laws, whether it be sodomy laws or drug laws or loitering laws, is that they're only used against minorities. They're only used against the weakest members of our society. And that is precisely when the Supreme Court needs to step in. So I do think the decision was a correct decision. And I hope people, when they realize that we have silly laws, that sometimes the Supreme Court has to protect us, or more importantly, they should work to make sure that our police forces and our DAs across the nation apply the laws fairly to everyone. After all, if you sit outside your porch to enjoy the fireworks, that could be loitering, right? So do we really want these laws enforced against just one? So again, I do want to praise the Supreme Court this week, whether it's affirmative action or sodomy laws, and I hope you will tune in next week. Next week, we're going to discuss Bush's faith-based initiative. We're going to discuss the question of whether the government should fund religious organizations that want to hire only their own. What do you think? Do you think that the government should sponsor religious discrimination? Or do you think that if you get money from the government to do a soup kitchen or a homeless shelter, that maybe you should have to hire everyone? George Bush, interestingly enough, just last week finally admitted what he wants. He wants religious discrimination. He actually wants to roll back civil rights laws, some of which have lasted 60 years. And the press has had very little attention on this. And that's why, here on The Inside Scoop, we bring these issues to your attention. So again, I hope you'll come back next week when our topic is Bush's faith-based initiative. And you can visit the website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and send me an email and let me know what you think. That's all for The Inside Scoop. And we will be back next week, Sundays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop.
AM 1200 W.